People of the internet, how do? I'm the Efkin Guy, this is the Efkin Show, and today we're talking about movies you may not have seen. I say we as later on we have a guest coming on to discuss them as well. Note the lack of the prefix special to that sentence. Don't get too excited. Also questions, because I need content. No pissing around today, let's get on with the show.
We're here.
It's a house in the woods, with nobody else for miles around.
Nothing to worry about, right?
I really think there's something out there waiting to kill us.
Help me!
I'm still going back and forth between an axe murderer and an alien from outer space.
Was that comment really necessary?
The traditional horror movie usually has certain tropes. An isolated location, oversexed teenagers who are up to no good, a bloodthirsty maniac in a mask, and lots of blood. The concept is now older than most of the actors who played the teenagers in those films. Started in the 70s with, well, let's say Halloween, shall we? Certain rules were created and followed by each and every photocopied duplicate of that movie. The innocent virgin will always be the final girl. Drinking and fucking was a surefire way to get yourself killed. There's always someone behind you. You're always going to have a bad time if you go to investigate that weird noise in the bushes. And if you're in a big group and decide to split up, you're toast. I will never, ever, ever, under any circumstances, say, I'll be right back. These rules had variations from film to film, but mostly they were replicated to form the blueprint of a slasher. A blueprint that was copied 100 or 1,000 times more. The teens would go somewhere remote, they drink beer, make fun of the virgin, all die horribly, except the virgin, who'd kill the big bad guy and live to see the sequel. And yeah, there would be a sequel, because that bad guy, well, he's not really dead, is he? Admittedly, not all horror movies are created equal. Evil Dead, Halloween, and Nightmare on Elm Street were quite different, so you can't really say they were all exactly the same. But then even for the ones which had a gimmick, generation loss eventually set in. You got to the point where sending your killer off to New York or giving the kids fighting against them superpowers diluted the formula into a watered-down mess that no one wanted. Within a decade, all these stories and ideas seemed played out. The once mighty horror genre, films that were so cutting-edge that it was banned from households and they created an entire system to keep them out of them, was stale and played out. The reason? The proliferation of horror films coincided with outbreaks of stories involving real-life crazies with a knife. Those maniacs were hitting their stride, and previously the idea someone was going to break into your house, eat your face, before shitting in the hole that used to be your mouth, wasn't really even a danger they'd thought about. 15 years later, you've invested in new locks on the door and learned karate. Or if you live in America, you've got a bigger gun. If you listen carefully, you can hear the mad chainsaw murderer coming for me right now. As well as those real scenarios happening on the news, we'd also seen all the cliches played out on screen. We knew what to expect. We assumed the people on screen should know better as well. Well, before we may cover our eyes and say, Don't go in the basement. Something down there. Oh no. We'd then be saying, oh, what the fuck are you going down in the basement for, you stupid fucking muppet? Our sympathy just ran out for these buffoons on screen. Without any emotional attachment, we'd evolve into cheering for the bad guys. Which is another story for another day. Fortunately for the genre and us, there was someone who's going to break the mould and start a revolution in the horror movie scene. One that would save it for another 20 years at least. A horror movie where the protagonists almost know they're in a horror movie. A meta look at the insides of the film where every dumb decision is looked at, recognised and avoided because they've watched the films they're actually in. This man was a visionary director that saw the writing on the wall for the genre they loved and did something about it. That man was Rolf Kanevsky. I'm sure you're expecting another name to be screamed out there. But 5 years before Wes Craven sacrificed Drew Barrymore to the horror altar, Rolf Kanevsky wrote and directed the super low budget movie There's Nothing Out There. On a budget that was decided by how much he could beg off his friends and family, starring no one you've ever heard of, and shot on location at a mate's house in the woods, There's Nothing Out There featured the first ever horror nerd, Mike, a guy without a girlfriend and who is inexplicably invited along to a vacation house with two couples, where he sees all the horror tropes play out in front of him, and he actively avoids doing all of them. His friends, however, don't heed his warnings and fall into the trap so many fornicating fools did so before. The film managed to get on a few festival circuits and shown to some distributors, but no one picked it up, possibly due to the tone of the film being so weird and its cheapness. The film eventually disappeared into the annals of cult history. Annals. And while the short documentary about it called Copycat, they do make a note that Wes Craven was interested in the movie, and well, you know, Wes Craven, you hack, possibly, maybe. We'll never know, to be fair. It's a very different movie to Scream, not just in regards to budget and acting abilities. It is the Hollywood machine versus a guy who had his parents' mortgage at home off for a budget here, though. So we can't really compare them. The story is also wildly different. Scream was a traditional slasher movie, tipped on its head, with the meta side of things relegated to the crazy video shop employee, Randy, who, to be fair, is similar to the main guy in There's Nothing Out Here. But that's really the only thing they have in common. The bad guy in this film is space frogs with hypnotic abilities. As I said, not all horror movies are equal or exactly the same. So this idea, kind of original, I guess. But the premise and story kind of ends there. This film, the gimmick of it is the guy who knows horror movies. Yeah, that's the main hook of it. It's the comedy element. It's a very simple movie in that respect, a throwback to the era of late night movie rentals with a lager and a curry. You know, you go home with the lads with a movie if you've struck out at the pub. And rather than a well crafted, big budgeted loud affair full of Hollywood hotties, this film is just, it looks grotty. Grotty, but it doesn't lack hotties. Another throwback to the era of film is there's not a single female in it that manages to escape the movie with their dignity. They even chipped in a bunch randomly to just to, you know, get them out for the lads even more. It's also shot in extremo male gazo vision, with it lingering on the business ends of the females in the movie, which makes my art look subtle. The focus of the camera is definitely gusset heavy, and will likely angle the woke snowflake masses these days who think women should be treated with respect and all that political correct nonsense. Note, this is sarcasm. Downside, the main character is slightly annoying, and I'm sure the virgin surviving trope is covered as well. If not explicitly mentioned, he's the only one in the film without a love interest in the house, and I doubt any sane person would want to spend time with him. Would I recommend the film? Yes, I would. It's a genuine hidden nugget of the genre that deserves a bit of respect for the idea and ambition behind it. I'm all for indie filmmakers going out and doing something in that era especially, because it's a different world now. Any Muppet can go out and shoot a movie and edit on their phone. Real cameras, real film, real stereos, etc, etc. Hats off, and I'm giving it a 3-star award for that fact. Yes, you get an extra star just for doing shit like that in an era when it took a lot of effort and time to do. So that was There's Nothing Out There. You can find it on Mubi, or if you're not a pretentious movie prick like me, Amazon Prime probably has it. Just give it a search, it'll turn up. There's also a documentary called Copycat. That's also well worth checking out. That's on Mubi, possibly on YouTube as well. And you can hear that chainsaw murderer coming closer, so I'm going to get out of here.
So I spent most of yesterday with a guy called Rolf Konevsky, who is without a doubt the biggest horror fan I've ever met.
When I was about 3.5 years old, my father introduced me to Abbott and Costello movies. They did a series of monster movies, and probably one of the best in the genre ever is Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. The beginning of that scared the hell out of me.
Go answer the phone.
I could never get through the first werewolf transformation with Lon Chaney.
Package roll.
Until finally, Costello says, you know,
you'll have to get your dog away from the phone. I can't hear a word you're saying.
And then I got through the movie and thought it was great.
So Rolf finds himself drawn to those horror movies that don't take themselves too seriously.
I just fell in love with that blend of horror and humor, I guess.
But at the same time, he's taking them incredibly seriously. before long, he's seeking out absolutely everything he can get his hands on.
I started watching all the horror films, renting out a video.
So I did have a word with that guy with the chainsaw. He's just finishing up now. Just getting rid of the bodies. He did say he wouldn't be coming for me, which is a good thing. Because I've got some questions for you. You know what that means. Yeah. Content. So I've actually got two questions. The first one is a thinker in a few ways. The film There's Nothing Out There was supposed to be the first to reference the idea of other films in the genre existing. Do we then assume that by not acknowledging them, that every film prior to it has none of those films in them? You know, Scream was in the mid-90s. By that point, horror films had existed for like 20-odd years. And yeah, the mid-90s were 30 years ago. Sorry. Any slasher movie that comes out now that does reference Scream therefore has no such film in its universe. Not just Scream, but Friday the 13th, Halloween, and all the multitude of knockoffs after that. So it's a weird parallel universe where video stores never had a horror section. Or to bring this analogy up to date, the libraries of streaming services are probably half the size. I'll go one further here. An even more egregious example of it is The Walking Dead. Characters call the zombies walkers when they're obviously zombies. So the zombie genre doesn't exist in the universe of The Walking Dead. George Romero was probably never born, or if he was, he would probably just be still doing children programming, likely ending up on Sesame Street. You could probably go even further and deduce in some films cinema doesn't exist at all, because movies and TV are so ingrained in our culture now that it'd be hard to be in a situation that isn't comparable to one that isn't available on Netflix. Not just talking the horror genre here. Love stories, there's no end to them, and people would compare their relationships to, well, you know, you could probably compare it to a Woody Allen film being played out every day. As long as your love life isn't actually like Woody Allen's story, that's fine. And in action films, you're telling me none of these macho hero types have ever seen Die Hard. So that's the question. What's the first instance in a film where a film referenced the fact that movies exist? I'm not talking fourth wall breaking here. You know, Mel Brooks and Monty Python had these instances in Blazing Saddles and Holy Grail, where they sort of crossed over into other film sets. But I'm talking movies where the story is, with bunny ears, a real story. And they talk about films that are real in their real lives. I don't know if you need to also disqualify porno in films. As where else do you get grot in the early 90s, early 80s, 70s? You know, Taxi Driver and American Werewolf in London have those scenes in the porno theatres. I don't know if we can count that. Because Taxi Driver was 76, so you have to go earlier than that. Maybe a non-grot caveat needs to be applied. So, the question? What's the first instance in a film where a film referenced the fact that movies exist? And the second question, this one's slightly easier. What's your favourite movie in a movie moment? Is it Gremlins versus Snow White? Margot Robbie and Quentin Tarantino's foot fetish? The glorious Nazi killing in Inglourious Basterds? Or is it the very British porn cinema in Piccadilly featured in American Werewolf in London? Answers on a postcard, or to the email, or to social media. Yeah, that's probably easier actually. Social media. You can find all my links on totalcoldzone.com. I'll be asking it on there in a little bit anyway, and getting answers from people unsolicited, not knowing that they're actually being read out on a show as content.
Here comes a new challenger!
Hello, Boo. How do you do?
I do well. How do you do?
I do good. I do good. I do very good.
I do good.
What's your favourite movie within a movie moment? Just springing this on you. So,
movie,
you know,
within a movie moment.
Yeah, well, people are watching a film inside a film itself. The existence of film within a movie.
I had one. Oh, it's gone. There's a movie where they're watching Night of the Living Dead, and every time it comes up, I go, oh, they're watching Night of the Living Dead. Obviously, that's an easy one because it's...
public domain.
Yeah, public domain. So that, and I've noticed, and Steamboat Willie. But, but yeah, like I'm watching things and I'm like, oh, I recognise the sound. I recognise that clip. That's Night of the Living Dead. But no actual movies within movies that I can think of.
Not Inglourious Bastards.
No. I've not seen it.
American Werewolf in London? What, they're in the porno cinema? Taxi Driver? They're in the porno cinema?
Pee Wee Herman, when it was in the porno theatre.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, where she's doing the foot fetish thing for Quentin Tarantino.
Is that every film? Hey, I'm going to drink from your foot. That's the only thing I want you to do in the movie.
Yeah. So last time you were on the show, we talked about films that people had seen that maybe no one else had. Now, in the past, responses to the questions online haven't been too great. Buckle up. Everybody has a film they reckon no one else has seen. And we'll get to them right after this commercial break.
Hey, do you like pillows? How about body pillows? Super sexy body pillows with extra cool foam tech fillings, so it always feels like the other side. Do you also like conspiracy theories and want to live under a dictatorship of a fat orange billionaire sex best who absolutely does not give two shits about you, your freedoms, or the country you say you love? Then buy the sexy Trump body pillow from mybodypillow.com. Daddy Trump even has a secret pocket you can store your gun in. The pillow's foam tech filling is always cold to the touch, much like the cold, hard cash we will make off this and anything else emblazoned with the image of your favorite cult leader and wannabe dictator in chief that you idiots keep buying. Go to mybodypillow.com and use the code SUCKER for a 5% discount on every purchase over $200. Buy now and get a free hat. You like hats, don't you? This one is red and has gold words on it, saying a catchy slogan we just thought up. Daddy Trump loves you. Daddy Trump is best.
Boo, have you heard of Mubi?
Have I heard of movies? Yes, I've seen
Mubi.
A couple.
There's... Mubi, M-U-B-I.
Oh, yes, it's a streaming channel.
That's it. It's the amazing curated movie streaming service that provides any arty film fans with a choice of foreign films you may not have heard of. It's currently doing a deal where you get a 7-day free trial, which is pretty neat. You know, get the first taste for free. Like last time, this isn't a paid advert. It's just a service I quite like that I'd like other people to know about and pointing out they've got a neat little deal on. Yeah, I'm not sponsored.
Okay. Because I would have gone harder. Mubi? I love Mubi!
No, they've got like a deal at the moment. If you're actually a member, you can send out an invite to someone and they get a free month rather than 7 days for free. Also gives me a month free. So if you want a free code to Mubi for a month, send us an email on totalcultzone.com. Find one of the social medias you're on. Send me a link to your email address. I can send you a link. You get a month free of Mubi. Because, you know...
Send me your address.
Well, you can send me a fake address and you sign up with a fake address. So, what are we in a given mood? What do you want to let everyone know?
What do I want them to? Is this my pluggy plugs?
Yeah, go for it. That's like this isn't like paid adverts. There's just services I want to point out to people.
Okay, well,
and you know, it's better than selling my soul to give you a discount code to a product that's a piece of shit.
I just want to big up the good people at Hex Pro Wrestling, Venom Championship Wrestling, and UKPW. That's United Kingdom Professional Wrestling for. Put me on their shows, and if you want to come and see the bad boy himself, go online and either look up Hex Pro Wrestling, UKPW, or Venom Championship Wrestling. I have more appearances coming towards the end of the year for other promotions, but if you want to see me anytime in the next few months, that's the best way to do it. Don't forget to follow Boo Lamont PW on Instagram or Boo Lamont Pro Wrestler on Facebook for all your booly picks. That's booly picks.
Nice. So the question I put out to people was, what's a film you've seen you don't think anyone else has? Movies you can mention and get nothing but a blank look in return. I don't think I stipulated that it had to be a great film. I think the fact that people remember them, however, has made them have an impact on them in some way. So, ready? Ready? It's going to be a marathon episode.
Excellent. I love a marathon, now known as Snickers.
So the lovely Rob Jones, who'll be on next week's show, being a vinyl wanker with me, he said, Mr. Bones. He watched this on a bus in Fiji, said it was very weird, possibly South African. His description was, a tribe needs to locate their tribal heir, not heir, and the witch doctor goes to a golf tournament in Sun City to track him down, and he turns out to be a non-union Tiger Woods. He literally watched it with 30 Fijians laughing their asses off. The official thing is, it's pretty similar to what he said. It's a 2001 family-friendly movie from South Africa, starring local actor comedian Leon Schuster. Also had Davey Ramsey in it, who is one of the side characters in Dexter for a few seasons, which I just finished watching, but I recognised him. And Faison Love, who was Big Worm in Friday, and the shop manager in Elf. In 2002, it became the highest grossing movie ever for South Africa. Okay, and the reviews in for this one, I think most of these are from Letterboxd, because it's, they do like short form reviews. Twangu, they don't make such funny, politically incorrect movies like this anymore.
I'm sorry, I'm going down a rabbit hole. Have you seen some of the other stuff that this guy has done? There's one in particular called There's a Zulu on My Stoop, which I would really like to see.
Well, the second review is from Ryan, who said, pure shit with moments of blackface. So,
yeah. that's basically... And there's three of them. There's Mr. Bones 1, 2 and 3.
Yep.
It's a franchise.
Yep, 2008 had a sequel called Mr. Bones 2, Back from the Past, which had some time travelling element. And in 2022, Mr. Bones 3, Son of Bones. So he's passing the
Son of Bones
blackface thing on to his next generation. Next one is Doom Generation Podcast. They gave us Millie Willy. Now, Millie always wondered what it was like to be a boy. This morning, she woke up with her first clue.
Oh, God. Oh, God, wait, before I say a word, what year was this film made?
It's a gender swap movie from 1986.
Oh, God, cool. It's going to be really fucking politically incorrect now.
Starring Pamela Alden, whose name maybe does ring a bell to you, maybe? No? No?
Not really.
Prolific voice actor these days, it seems. Most known, perhaps, in this case, quite ironically, as Bobby Hill from King of the Hill.
Yeah. Does this film have a clip where someone drives past her and asks if she how much? I saw a comedy film and I was watching it and someone was like, I wasn't watching it, it was on, and someone pointed and they were like, do you recognize that voice? And I was like, what, that woman, she sounds like Bobby Hill. And it was.
Yeah. Also has Seth Green in it, because he's in everything back then.
Yep.
Yeah, Sun Sentinel panned the film and said it's so shallow, boring and half-baked that one wonders if anyone looked at the product before distributing. But it seems to have a bit of a resurgence of late, getting cult screenings all over the place due to its subject matter. And Juan on Letterboxd said an 80s rock GT comedy that has the premise of a girl wishing to be a guide because they have it easy, according to her. Yes, we do. The setup is flimsy, but enough to get things going. It has to be underscored that when Millie gets her extra bit, the parents just roll with it. Absurd? Maybe, but the movie goes from there and doesn't get hung up with the details of how crazy the scenario is. After all, there's a movie to be had. When things get going, though, you get a mixture of 80s shenanigans that are somewhat typical, but function to show how masculinity is a burden for guys. Is it a burden for us? I don't know. You're very macho these days. You're always in the gym.
That's not macho. I just don't want to die of heart disease before I'm 50.
So maybe not the most thoughtful exploration, but the antics led to its premise and the theme. And from there, the movie does indeed delve into sexuality. I don't want to give away too much about this aspect of the film, because the movie surprised me with its forward-thinking approach to what the movie presents. So yeah, apparently it is sort of gaining momentum. All the reviews seem to say the last act kind of ruins it.
I mean, there was a whole... Before we move on, I've got to say, it's such a random subject matter, but I have seen so many of those SWAT movies. There was the one with... was it called... it's already out of my head.
Vice Versa?
Yeah, that was the one with Dudley Moore was good. And there was another...
Vice Versa was Judge Reinhold and...
That's it.
Fred Savage. Dudley Moore, which one was that?
Hold on, I'm going to find... Hold on. Because that was the one I mainly watched, the one with Dudley Moore. Like Father, Like Son. Dudley Moore, Kirk Cameron, and they body swap. Ooh. 1987. There we go. There's a film that you may not have heard of. It also has young Sean Austin in it. So, yeah, it's Kirk Cameron, Sean Austin, Dudley Moore. And, yeah, they the father and son swap bodies. Oh, no, we're both holding on to this Tibetan wishing bowl at the same time. Wom, 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 wom.
Lights
wom,
flash
wom.
On.
There's noises, light flashing up. Yeah.
It's always ancient Chinese curses, isn't it? Asian curses.
Well, it's just proof that you can't trust the...
You think what I do is not important? If I were a boy, you would take me seriously. Boys have got it made. Look at them. Not a care in the world.
You gotta loosen up about boys.
I'm loose. Now you gotta think. Your deepest, your darkest heart's desire.
Truly a miracle has happened to Millie. And now the fun begins. Last night she was a girl. This morning she's a movie. Unlike anything you've seen before.
Now when I was a young boy...
Shh! At the age of this is a guy's thing, Stephanie.
Can you do things with it?
I don't know, I woke up and there it was! The
greatest Mrs. Niceman, Millie has a...
But now I'm a main...
Surprise.
So moving on, we have Kitman Music with Jugface. Jugface? Yeah, 2013 horror. Written, directed by Chad Crawford Kinkle. Thankfully, doesn't do a hat trick in acting the film, which is a good sign for these ones. It's like quite low budget. When she learns the supernatural pit worshipped by her remote community in the woods has demanded her as a blood sacrifice, Ada struggles to find a way to survive, while the pit lashes out in anger. The big star in it is Sean Young. And she's the last one credited, so I'm guessing it's a cast of unknowns, which, may be a good thing. The cover art isn't doing any favours for it, though.
Wait, that's Sean Young? Oh, no, don't say anything, Boone. Shut up. She looks
laces
kind of
out.
She kind of reminds me.
Talking about inappropriate.
No, she looks good, man. She looks good. Different.
Yeah, so it's accepted to play at a number of film festivals, so maybe worth a look. The cover reviews for it. Unrelenting and unconventional backwards horror film condemning cults with the lead character we're only meant to sympathise, but when only meant to... Jesus Christ, these reviews are terrible. That's not me reading it wrong. With the lead character only meant to sympathise but empathise as well, Chad Crawford Kinkle shows very early promise as a filmmaker in general, whether he tackles horror throughout his career or not, with the stellar performances and a disturbing film to boot, making Jugface one of the greatest horror movies of the current decade. Highly recommended. That was from Movie Bright 91, who probably is in the film. And Cadence Tomlinson said, extremely low budget horror with terrible dialogue. 5 stars, no notes. The Learn German for Your Music podcast gave us Killing of a Sacred Deer.
I have heard that. I've heard of that movie, The Killing of the Sacred Deer.
Yeah, one I've heard of but couldn't quite place until I looked it up. And yeah, I it's one of those. Oh yeah, that one. It's Yorgos Lanthimos. And, I think I blocked out his name after trying to watch The Lobster and just not getting on with it. Very weird, very extreme, I think the reviews have said. It's from 2017. A charismatic surgeon is forced to make an unthinkable sacrifice after his life starts to fall apart. With the behaviour of a teenage boy he is taken under his wing turns sinister. Yeah, I mean, it's got Colin Farrell, Barry Keoghan, Nicole Kidman and Alicia Silverstone in it.
That Barry Keoghan, I've not seen him in anything, but I know he's of the moment because isn't he in that Saltburn movie that everyone, the cum bath drinking movie that everyone's talking about?
Yeah, I didn't know that. Okay. I've been recommended that film as well. I think both of these may do a good double feature.
You need to stop talking to me about films before you see them. I go, oh, the big twist. Oh, is that the one with the big twist at the end where the woman kills the man?
Yeah, this is...
And well, actually...
I get told for spoiling films all the time. At least I'm going to tell people that I'm going to spoil it for you.
I fucked up that documentary for you so bad. I was like, oh my God, that documentary where the big twist is this. And you're like, oh, that movie would have been, that twist would have been unbelievable had you not told me.
film features a real heart bypass surgery. Lovely.
Nice.
Yeah. Cowboy on Letterboxd says, I have to rate every Yorgos Lanthimos film 5 stars, or else I'm afraid Yorgos himself will break into my house in the dead of night and force feed me my own hair. Nice. And the negative review, Claire Brennan. This movie sucks so much ass that I got jealous of the little boy when his eyes started bleeding. Here's one I think you may have heard of. Karen Meyer on Fred's as Tep's mum said, Run Lola Run.
Oh wow, you mean the oh, I've just got into cult cinema and have you heard of this film called Run Lola Run?
Yeah,
it's German, isn't it?
Yeah, it's German, got loads of techno in it. It's only 5 minutes long.
Yes,
thing is, she's from America and apparently this wasn't a big thing out there, at least in her part of the world.
It was over here, like in the early 90s. I remember, I was a child and I remember Run Lola Run.
Yeah, it's huge over here. Maybe not like in terms of the mainstream. Might everyone watching it, but everyone knew about it.
Oh, everyone had a poster of the redheaded, you know, the redhead woman running on the front, the famous poster. And that is very much of the era, I believe. Yeah. Very much of the era. Dripping with 90s.
Sometimes cinema is a girl running while techno music is playing in the background. Indeed.
History, it is.
Yeah. History for You podcast. They said static.
Static? Did you see him jumping on the phone as soon as I hit static?
So static, he said, if you remember kids in full fish masks, a TV that could show you heaven, and a bus full of grannies exploding, you know it. This is a quirky out-of-place worker at a crucifix factory in the Bible Belt invents a device he claims can show pictures of heaven. Discouraged and confused by the inability of those around him to see anything but a screen full of static, he charismatically hijacks a bus of friendly elderly people in order to get media attention for his invention. That was very interesting. Keith Gordon, who directed it. Better known as a director these days, having directed episodes of Dexter, Better Call Saul, Fargo and The Bridge.
Mate, he played Rodney Dangerfield's son in Back to School. That's what he's known for. That's what he's known for. Not The Legend of Billie Jean.
SB Film Viewers said Kuroneko. So you've learned a little bit of Japanese. What does that mean?
And little cat.
Close. Black cat.
Oh, of course. I did know that.
This is a 1968 Japanese movie, historical drama and horror film. In this magnificent, eerie and romantic film, loosely based on the Japanese folktale The Cat's Return, which is a Ghibli film. I don't know if it's the same story.
Yeah, I was going to say The Cat's Return's something I've heard of.
Yeah, but I don't know if Ghibli did this one. A mother and daughter-in-law are raped and murdered by pillagers, but return from there as vampiric cat spirits intent on revenge. As a ghost lord soldiers into the bamboo groves, a fearless samurai is sent to stop that reign of terror. I don't think that's a Ghibli film. Maybe you had a different sort of telling of it. Another one I reckon you've heard of. The Dark Side of the Moon. I don't know if that's the Fred's thing. I should have written that down. Brother from Another Planet.
It's not called Brother from Another Planet. Oh, wait, no, that's a different 1993 sci-fi film. Don't look it up.
Brother from Another Planet. 1984 low-budget science fiction film, while sounding like a Mel Brooks corny movie, actually has a lot of depth to it. It's about an escaped extraterrestrial slave trying to find a new life on Earth, landing at Ellis Island. You can see the parable kind of story here. Protagonist played by Joe Morton doesn't have any lines in the entire film, so it's like a great visual film. We have to watch everything with the alien. It's like Anthropology, the movie, almost. It's an amazing film.
I mistaked it for another film that was released in 1992 in Denmark, and I apologise profusely. It absolutely was not. I've not heard of this film.
Oh, that one. I know exactly the one you're talking about now.
It's fine. I was made aware of it recently. It's not funny. It's not clever. It's not big. And it's not technically sci-fi.
No, it's
Brother from another planet.
Right? Yeah, I don't know. I'm surprised you didn't have heard this one. You might know it when you see it. It's pretty much just the guy lands on Earth. Well, looks like a guy, but he's got three webbed toes or something like that. And he just walks around New York while people try and catch him and enslave him again. And yeah, the whole slavery, America, finding a new life and a new land kind of metaphor.
Right, no. It's weird. I sort of reckon... Now I'm looking at a picture of him. I sort of recognise him, but not... I don't remember the brother from another planet.
All right, yeah. It's Joe Morton, who played Miles Dyson in Terminator 2.
I don't know how much longer I can hold this.
And apparently that a load guy, of other stuff. Yeah, he's been in a load of other stuff. He's quite celebrated.
That's what he's famous for.
I mean, he's just
not
one of those actors.
Bruce Brothers 2000, not Speed... But Terminator 2. I keep finding random films.
The Morbid Sheep Comics said Night Watch.
Oh, whoa. Was that like the that was big back in the day. They were going to make an entire series. It was going to be a huge franchise.
No. Not the Russian urban supernatural fantasy film. No, not that one.
Right.
This is the 1998 Ewan McGregor movie where he plays a night watchman at a morgue to pay for his law degree and ends up a suspect in a series of killings in the city.
That doesn't sound half as exciting as a supernatural.
It's a remake of a Swedish film of the same name, with the director coming on board to do this one as well. It's pretty much a shot-for-shot remake with non-Swedish. This was a pre-Star Wars McGregor. Before his big Hollywood push, same year as A Life Less Ordinary, which is one of those films you put on the list of films you only remember when someone mentions them.
Mate, I saw that at the cinema. That was the last film I saw with my ex-fiance at the time, and we went to see it in the cinema because she loved Tim Burton, because that's a Tim Burton movie. And it was the most boring Tim Burton movie I'd ever seen. In fact, no, actually, that's a lie, because I've seen Planet of the Apes. It was like the second... We went in with high hopes. It's got, I think it's got Great Khali in it as well.
Are you thinking of Big Fish?
No. What movie did you say? Oh, Life Less Ordinary's Cameron Diaz. That film shit as well. Sorry.
I love Life Less Ordinary. It should be a cult film. Yeah, Cameron Diaz.
That's it. Sorry, I am confusing Big Fish. Life Less Ordinary, yes. That was after that. Yeah, no, I didn't really get that.
Night Watch has Nick Nolte, Josh Brolin, Patricia Arquette, John C. Reilly, and Brad Dourif in it. I'm putting money on Brad Dourif being the bad guy.
Yeah, of course.
The review was Sierra? I don't know. Did I watch this for Ewan McGregor? Yes. Did I expect a bathtub scene and a public handjob scene? Nope. Am I complaining? Also no. So public handjob.
Oh, does he get his dick out in life? Oh, because there wasn't it like the Chinese book, the Japanese book, the selling book? Because I remember watching, I'd be like, oh, he's got his dick out. Brave. brave. I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it on camera.
I mean, he did it in Trainspotting.
Oh, he did it in Trainspotting as well, didn't he? He don't give a shit.
He probably did Shallow Grave as well.
He's always getting his lightsaber out. Doesn't Keith Allen get his dick out in Shallow Grave as well?
Yeah.
They find him dead, don't they? They find him naked and dead. Ironically, when I first saw that film, the first thing I did was just pulled out sausage. It just seems to be the way.
Cool. Gavin Belson, the Be There With Belson podcast, come up with Love Me If You Dare. Jesus, sounds more like a threat or a request.
Yeah, don't threaten me with a good time.
As adults, best friends Julian and Sophie continue the odd game they started as children, a fearless competition to outdo one another with daring and outrageous stunts. While they often act out to relieve one another's pain, the game might be a way to avoid the fact that they are truly meant for one another. This is a French comedy, which is why no one's ever heard of it, Gavin.
Everybody knows that the only decent French comedy was Ridicule from the 1990 something. That was a great comedy. And there's another film that I've seen that no fucker has ever seen.
French comedies. It does have Marion Cotillard in it, which is a win for me, even though I can't pronounce the second name. So, Patrick Fisker-Kerley. This movie was released in the United States to capitalise on the success of Amelie, and immediately you get why. It's a quirky French romance with a beautiful brunette filled with cinematic flights of fancy. But this movie's fucked up. It's a romance between two sadists who get off and ruin each other's lives by alienating dares, and it's pretty good, but often mean, dark comedy. If Amelie is Paddington, then Love Me If You Dare is The Revenant.
Julian and Sophie were two mischievous kids. Who invented an outrageous game? Whoever held the tin box would meet the other's dare. The rule was simple. Are you game or not? But as they grew older, the stakes grew higher. The dares became dangerous. Until the gamble was more than just a game. It was an obsession. Better than sex.
Mr. Matt Doyle, what with Red Knights?
Red Knights! Tap, 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 tap.
See, there's a film. Oh man, what was
I don't know this one. It's a French Hong Kong Gallo slasher. Okay, wow. I did not know that. I didn't know that Giallo was a
Giallo
genre.
Giallo. Yeah, woman steal is an ancient artifact and flees to Hong Kong in order to sell it. Little does she know that the box contains a vial of poison. A poison that paralyzes its victims but heightens their senses of pleasure and pain. The people she is dealing with go to any lengths to obtain the poison. It's a film made by Hong Kong, France and Belgium. Described in reviews as an erotically charged fetish horror and even occasionally a giallo movie. When he said Red Knights, I actually thought he meant the film where a Russian-American ballet dancer's airplane is forced to land in Russia, where he is repatriated. Starring Gregory Hines and Mikhail Baryshnikov.
Gregory Hines was in a movie that I caught by accident years ago. What was it called? It's like Tales from the Subway or Tales from the New York Subway, and it's like five stories all of a sudden. It was a TV movie made by HBO, and it's like three or four little stories all told on the train, and he's just a dancer on the platform, and he's sort of like almost like a narrator character. Guarantee no fucker seen that for many years either.
Subway Stories, Tales from the Underground,
that's the one. Yep. Really, really enjoyed that. Like when I saw it, It gave me like such a vibe, like yeah, a New York vibe. Gave me that New York vibe.
Okay, so Marta Kowalski. Yeah, I'm terrible with names. Sorry.
Yeah.
Especially when the Polish Kowalski. I actually dated a Polish girl once, and she showed me a second name, and I was like, nope.
Nope.
Yeah. She did come up with a great film though, which I think you may have heard of. TV movie. British TV movie. 1991. Bernard and the Genie.
Oh, of course I remember Bernard and the Genie. Because it was the big Christmas... Lenny Henry, yeah? It was the big Christmas sort of production that year. Because BBC used to do like a big story. Like one year it was like, Wallace and Gromit. But this year, that particular year, 91, it was that Lenny Henry, Bernard and the Genie. I do remember that.
Yep, starring Alan Cummins, Rowan Atkinson, Lenny Henry and Gary Lineker.
Of course. Still being paid an absorbent amount by the BBC, even in 1991.
Fucking woke genie nonsense. So Bernard Ball, a mild Bernard art buyer, is fired by his greedy boss, abandoned by his girlfriend, and discovers a genie in an old bottle. The genie immediately embraces the modern world and helps Bernard on the side. So written by Richard Curtis. This is a British TV movie from 91 that was part responsible for Richard Curtis making movies. It's part of BBC Movies, Strand, Scream 1. And convince him you could make a movie with a TV budget. Four Winds and Funerals soon followed. And The rest is history. We got Love Actually because of this film. Aren't we lucky?
Oh, yeah, thanks. Thanks, guys.
This film was remade last year for the Peacock streaming service, starring Melissa McCarthy.
What? You're saying words. I haven't thought about Bernard and the Genie for many years. However, I now have thought about it again, and I don't want Melissa McCarthy. That's something you made to wind me up, though. Like,
yeah.
Did you enjoy it? Well, it's being remade this year with Melissa McCarthy. Dawn of the Dead. It's being remade this year, but all of the lead characters are being swapped for Melissa McCarthy and the fucking kid that fucking talks about the environment.
No, this actually was remade last year. Alan Cummings pops up for an easy paycheck. Richard Curtis actually wrote it. I think he was just like,
okay,
we want you to make a movie. And he's like, oh, okay. And looked at the old script and went, yeah, there you go. So a review of the new film. So the film was called Genie. And a radio contest entitled Write the Screenplay for Genie after only seeing the trailer had to be cancelled this week when 22,000 fourth graders tied for first place, having replicated the entire movie down to last semicolon.
For Bernard Bottle.
Fired Bottle. I suck ye.
But help is at hand in the shape of a 2,000-year-old wild genie.
The real skill, of course, is in the landing. And I think I need a little more practice.
Alan Cumming, Lenny Henry and Rowan Atkinson star in Bernard and the Genie, Monday at 8 on 1.
Adults are predictable. They expect you to behave as though what you do today is going to have an effect on where you'll be in 30 years. I mean, it's ridiculous to think that there's going to be anything in 30 years.
I don't know what's worse, you know? Being blown up in nuclear war or having a 7-Eleven on every corner.
You want it to be just like you? I think maybe if I had your haircut, I could sell more policies?
I think you may have seen. Sunset Skip come up with Gleaming the Cube.
Oh, Gleaming, but the old skateboard movie. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Radical. that's up there with like Cold as Ice. There was Gleaming the Cube, Cold as Ice, Mac and Me, BMX Bandit.
Gleaming the Cube. All we cared about was Gleaming the Cube until the night they killed his brother. What was Gleaming the Cube again? I didn't look that up. I know it's something to do with a skateboarding maneuver.
Yeah, it's Gleaming the Cube. I don't fucking know.
Yeah,
I'm looking though.
Was it Charlotte on Letterboxd said Tony Hawk driving a Pizza Hut delivery truck laden down with skateboarders in a hot pursuit of anti-communist gun smugglers. Certainly the best political thriller I've ever seen. Because Tony Hawk and the Bones Brigade all starred in this, doing stunts and like on screen.
They did.
And the DVD actually has a Easter egg of a skateboarding documentary about them. And wow. HK Fanatic says a movie that feels like it was made for exactly five people in 1989. One of them being Sunset Skip. I mean, I'm not sure who that year was clamouring for a Christian Slater vehicle that was part rebellious teen skateboard flick, part political conspiracy action thriller, part shock. Now, the biggest shock of the whole film came when I saw that it was written by Michael Tolkien, the acclaimed author of The Player. I suppose that explains why the script, clearly aimed at the youth market, seemed so concerned with the lingering impact of the Vietnam War in the late 80s.
Can you believe that he did Gleaming the Cube and 1 year later... did Pump Up the Volume. And Young Guns 2. Mate, have you seen the filmography of Christian Slater? Like, he had a run of incredible... So he was in The Legend of Billie Jean. That's fine. then he... 88, Heathers. 89, The Wizard and Gleaming the Tube. 90, Tales from the Dark Side, Pump Up the Volume and Young Guns 2. 91, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, Star Trek 6 and Mobsters. 92... Cuffs, Fern Gully. 93, True Romance. 94, Interview with a Vampire. This guy had a fucking run. Honestly, like I'm shocked. It didn't really fuck up until 95.
What was 95?
Well, even Murder in the First is good, but that was like his only movie in 95. And then Broken Arrow in 96, Austin Powers 97, Hard Rain 98. Zoolander.
He went to like just cameos at some point then.
Yeah. One of
I know Star Trek 6 was essentially him just sort of him walking into the room and going, yeah, this, the ship's here, or something like that. Which is one of being Harry, Star Trek.
One of the Harry the Bastard's favourite movies is Churchill the Hollywood Years, and with Christian Slater. I don't know if you know that movie.
Yeah, I know that one. I've actually watched it. It's interesting sounding.
An American retelling of World War II. Yeah, it's a very good one.
Isn't like that any time they talk about World War II?
Well, they came in and saved us. What are you talking about? We were on the ropes.
Yeah. Okay. So John Cross, the man behind the excellent, incredibly prolific Miscellaneous Plumbing Fixtures band, like an album every month at some point. It's great stuff. Also host of the Art of Movie Diner podcast and the best film podcast ever called Two Middle-Aged Men Watch 90s Era Jim Belushi Films.
I believe Jim's popped up a few times on their social media, hasn't he?
Yeah.
I've seen. Well done, boys.
Yep. So he gave us three films, all of which I would say watch as he recommended them, and he knows these fun, obscure films. He came up with Candy Mountain. A struggling musician sets out to find the legendary guitar maker Elmore Silk, with whom he hopes to strike a deal with to make him rich and famous. Got an all-star cast of musicians, Tom Waits, Joe Strummer, Dr. John, Leon, Redbone, all people you'd know if you know music.
Yep. I've heard of Joe Strummer.
No Tom Waits? No?
Well, yes. I've heard you mention him.
I know you thought he did the closing time song from Semisonic. Sean Erickson said, what happens when 50s beat generation photographer and a 60s counterculture novelist make an 80s movie about commerce and artistic integrity with a bunch of 70s musicians? The ambling yet profound Candy Mountain is what happens. Sounds great. His second film, Sir Henry at Rawlinson's End. The tagline is, if a thing is worth doing, it's worth forcing someone else to do it. So Henry Rawlinson attempts to exorcise the ghost of his brother Humbert, who is accidentally killed in a drunken duck shooting incident. So 1980s, very, very, very British comedy stemming from a radio show. It was on John Peel's radio show. Monty Python collaborator Neil Innes allegedly said of this movie, the star was an alcoholic, the writer was an alcoholic, the producer was an alcoholic, and the director was an alcoholic.
That's nice. Good.
And his final film is Blood Massacre, which is a Don Dola film, renowned low-budget filmmaker who you should look into if you like your budgets low and entertainment high. Apparently, Blood Massacre is very different to his other movies. I think there's at least a run of three films, which is exactly the same film, just retold.
Not heard of that one.
Yeah.
Not heard of any. They're doing all right for them. We've not heard.
Okay, John Taylor Jr. come up with Kenny and Company. Several days in the life of Kenny, a typical 12-year-old and his friends. Kenny goes through all the activities that most of us went through as kids as he and his friend prepare for Halloween. Along the way, Kenny deals with such issues as bullies and his first crush on a girl. It sounds like a standard feel-good kids film. Written and directed by Don Coscarelli. Don Coscarelli. There you go. Got it right in the end. His next film went on to feature much of the same cast, and that film was Phantasm.
Now, Phantasm, obviously, I know.
John Taylor Jr. come up with three as well. Second one, definitely heard of this one, The Plague Dogs.
Oh, God, we talked about this in the show, didn't we?
Yeah.
On the tits.
Fuck you, John. Why did you make me look this one up?
Plague Dogs, man.
I just had to read up a bit about it to get the information again, and I started welling up thinking about it. I'm like, no. written by Richard Adams, best known for Watership Down, and this is similar category of movie, really. As it, Rolf and Snitter struggle to survive in the countryside of escaping from an animal research laboratory. They are pursued by both by search parties and then the military after rumours spread that they could be carrying the bubonic plague. Fuck
features
humans.
Features the only known instance of a dog pulling a shotgun on a human.
Yeah, and if you see the banned version, then eating the human.
There's a banned version? Oh my God, my afternoon.
They cut a scene out of it where they shoot the guy that was after them, and then eat him. Not shown, I don't think, but it is heavily implied, and they cut the implication out of the band, the censored version. And the final film he gave us was Pigheaded. It's a documentary that tells a provocative life story of the underground cartoonist and subversive art satirist Skip Williamson, who worked for National Lampoon, High Times, and the Encyclopedia Britannica. Thank you, Wiki. His most famous character is Snappy Sammy Smoot, who appeared in a whole bunch of underground comics in the 60s and 70s, as well as Comic Book, a Marvel comic that was an attempt to get on the whole underground comic scene. And failed miserably, because it's Marvel. So Magic Mike, Mike Connell, come up with Lock. L-O-C-K-E.
K-E, yeah. I think I've heard of that.
Yeah, this is a weird one. Because the cast list is Tom Hardy, Olivia Colman, Tom Holland, Alice Lowe, and a bunch of others. It's pretty much just Tom Hardy in a car travelling between his construction site that he was working at to his house, having conversations on the phone, and only he stars in it. Shot over 6 nights, each scene is done in one take. And I believe he's doing the conversations live with people on the phone as he's doing it, or driving.
Mm.
So yeah, only he stars in it.
Interesting.
Yeah. I think someone said it was like a radio play that was unnecessarily put made into a film. The reviews are Rip Burrow Steel Podcast, who obviously didn't pay for this film. Man drives home while talking to his wife, girlfriend, boss and co-workers. Never leaves car. Impeccable call service. Too experimental. Not my cup of tea. Definitely my cup of tea, though. I quite like the idea of that. And Mike also said, until recently, he assumed he dreamt up the Garbage Pail Kids movie.
Oh, no, that was real.
That was the film I spent 2 weeks downloading on a fucking torrent. And then watched 5 minutes of it and went, no.
What's weird, I must admit, I have started... I was never really a big Garbage Pail Kid person, but I've started... I've started doing... a new series which is called Garbage Pail Kid Origins, and annoyingly I'm quite into it. it's about like the origins of the, so obviously you know the main Garbage Pail Kid, Atom Bob, with the, you know, he's on the cover with the he's the first Garbage Pail Kid, and it's about his origin and how the rest of them became Garbage Pail Kids. It's all right. And they do a crossover with Mad Balls, so it's now Garbage Pail Kid and Mad Balls is the thing.
Interesting. I know they had a big resurgence a couple of years back.
Oh yeah,
like over a decade now.
But then doesn't everything? It's what was new in the '80s is now, you know, we're by it because we're all adults.
And rebate with Melissa McCarthy.
No, anyway. I can imagine, mate. I tell you what, maybe that's the only movie I can see her in, like, reasonably.
Here's one should be great in. Rob Lou gave us Visitor Q.
Visitor Q? Again.
Oh man, you've not heard of this one?
No, I have. I do remember.
So Miike Takashi. Sort of...
Yeah,
Japanese,
yeah, yeah.
Movie, yeah.
It's Takashi Mike. I do remember it.
Yeah, a family drama rom com that starts with incest and ends with necrophilia. It's a good one. So Miike Takashi is the guy behind Audition, Ichi the Killer, Happiness of the Katakuris, 13 Assassins, One Missed Call, Dead or Alive, Yakuza Apocalypse, Crow Zero, and about 115 other movies. His output is 3.5 movies a year.
Jesus.
He's great.
Yeah, he is good.
Some of those films are terrible, though. Although Yakuza Apocalypse is one that I think a lot of people know about. But they may have seen a GIF from it where one of those mascots they have, in Japan, pretty much all those mascots. The big bad guy is actually dressed up in a mascot uniform, like that's a frog. But everyone else is just normally dressed.
Yeah. That sounds good. But Takeshi Mike, I mean, I thought you were about to mention Yakuza, as in Ryoga Gotoku, like a dragon, the series is called Yakuza in the UK and the US. I'm a massive fan of the game series, and then he bought the movie out around the same time as the first game, which is really weird because they've not done another movie since, when so much more has happened in the series. But it does have the two best characters from the original Yakuza in it. And yeah, it's a batshit crazy movie. I actually saw the movie before I'd heard of the game, which was
nice. He's done what's the lawyer game as well?
Oh, Phoenix Wright.
Yeah, apparently he's done a film with that.
Yeah, I've heard he's done a Phoenix Wright movie. He like, but he makes films that he like based on things he likes, and I think that was interesting fact that Phoenix Wright has one spin-off, and it is Harvey Birdman. there is a Harvey Birdman game done in the same style, and you have to find the evidence, build the case, and then you're in court. And it's done in a Harvey Birdman. That's really it. I started playing that again recently. Straight back on the old school emulator. Objection!
Okay, John Tiny Guitar Man Atkins, the ukulele teacher himself. He gave us Boiler Room. He said, people must know about it, as it stars Giovanni Ribisi and Vin Diesel.
Yeah.
But I've never heard anyone talk about Boiler Room, even though it's one of my favourite movies.
I remember Boiler Room. It's their financiers, their accountants.
Wolf of Wall Street, type deal. Yeah.
Yeah.
So a college dropout gets a job as a broker for a suburban investment firm, and he's on a fast track to success, but the job might not be as legitimate as it sounds. Also stars Ben Affleck.
Mm. And I was going to say, we didn't lead with the strongest, and Jamie Kennedy.
Well, Ben Affleck's in one scene, apparently. And Scott Cann. Yes, no.
Scott Cann?
He's one of those guys you see and go, I know him from something. And he's the one in Ready to Rumble that wasn't David Arquette.
Yes! That's right, a diamond upside down is a pussy!
So Zach AM on Letterboxd said, the most beautiful thing about this incredibly ugly movie is that it's further proof that Vin Diesel could be so much more than what he is, what the Fast and Furious franchise would have you believe he's capable of. Although he is cancelled now, so, fuck him.
He's cancelled? Sorry, I missed that. Why is he cancelled? What's he did? What did he do?
A former assistant to Vin Diesel was suing the actor, alleging in 2010 he pinned against the wall in a hotel suite and masturbated in front of her.
I don't even want somebody to walk in by accident. Why would you want someone to watch you?
And I believe we're at the end here, thankfully. Never again. Ross Jones.
Go on, what's our game?
He come with 1986 Solar Babies. In a future, Walters disappears from Earth, and a group of teenagers who live at an orphanage run by the despotic rulers of the new Earth find an orb of special power. They escape from the orphanage and try to cross the wasteland looking for a place where they can live free, even as the stormtroopers search for them and the orb. It looks like a cross between Mighty Morphin Power Rangers and Mad Max on roller skates. the trailer looks like it's one of those films only the 80s could produce. One of the reviews I found was, let me quote the synopsis, orphan roller skaters follow a magical sphere to freedom from fascist police of the future. This movie is 80s in a can, and I love it. Hollywood of today are cowards. They would never greenlight this movie today, and we are worse off for it.
And do you know what? It was made by Brooks. I've just seen it. It was made by Brooks Film as well. Now, he greenlit some weird movies and some good ones as well, actually. Wait. The irony is, Mel Brooks's production house produced two films that year. One was Solar Babies. Do you know what the other was?
Elephant Man.
Nearly. No. It's Cronenberg's The Fly.
Fucking hell.
Yeah, I knew that Mel Brooks. He actually produced Fly 2 as well. But we forgive him. But yeah, Elephant Man was 81. They produced that as well. Fucking hell. Brooks Films made some banners.
Yep, and the final film from Ross is Apex. Trapped in a future they didn't create, fighting an enemy they cannot stop. Time travelling experiment in which a robot probe is sent from the year 2073 to the year 1973 goes horribly wrong, thrusting one of the project scientists into a plague-ravaged alternative timeline whose war-weary inhabitants are locked in a constant battle with killer robots from the future.
So it's Terminator.
Yeah,
It's Terminator. Like, for lack of a better word, it's Terminator.
Yeah, this one is from 1994 and starring some people. This is just a straight-to-video written all over it.
Yeah. It's Bruce Willis and people.
No, not that bad. I want to watch it so badly. Good job it's on YouTube in all its straight from VHS glory. It's got the play symbol on it as well. The tracking, brilliant.
FYM by Ice.
FYM.
Yeah, fuck y'all motherfuckers.
So Boo, what films do you have that you don't think anyone else has seen?
Thank you for asking. I'm glad you asked this, because whenever we talk about films, there's a couple of comedies from back in the day that I used to enjoy. One of them was Volunteers from 1985 with Tom Hanks, John Candy. Not many people talk about that. It's about a sort of a playboy, rich guy who gets into massive gambling debts, and when he's running away from the people he owes the money to, he ends up on a plane of missionaries and ends up in a sort of rainforest country where he's got to help the locals and that sort of thing and learn the errors of his ways. That was pretty good. But the main film, when anyone asks me about a film that I love that not many people have seen or heard of, I always refer to Fear of a Black Hat, 1993. It's my favourite hip-hop comedy. It's better than CB4, in my opinion, and that's the reason nobody knows about it, is because another very popular film, very similar to that, came out at the same time, which is not half as funny. But yeah, Fear of a Black Hat is my one. It's a comedy about a group very similar to Public Enemy, but they're called Fellows with Hats, we'll call them. And basically, it's like a road movie. It follows the group. They end up breaking up at one point, then they come back for a big concert. And it's just done in a sort of MTV documentary style, and it's really funny. Like, cry funny if you haven't seen it before. Doesn't star anybody. Rusty Candeef is the main guy. He's the director and the lead actor.
Did he do anything else?
Yeah, he worked on what was it called? It was a little-known comedy sketch show from the early 2000s, The Chappelle Show. Yeah, he wrote a lot of stuff for Dave Chappelle as well, so very good.
I remember you mentioning that one years ago, and I still haven't watched it. It's on my list, which has just got immense...
Yeah, I now truly don't believe. I truly don't believe that I'm going to be able to be alive and watch every film I need to go back and watch, finish all my books and finish all my games. I think I've got enough to last a lifetime now on the sort of back burner.
Yeah. But those are your films to watch. A list will be in the show notes. You can watch those instead of another remake of a film no one asked for, starring Melissa McCarthy. The world of cinema is huge. Enjoy something different. I should point out we only briefly touched on World Cinema within this list. Last year, years, that's been like in the spotlight, and there's probably thousands of movies you haven't heard of waiting to be appreciated. Which is where that movie code would come in handy. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink, in it. Well, I hope you've enjoyed the ride today and found some stuff you'd be interested in that you haven't heard of before. Keep sending suggestions in and I'll add them to my ever-expanding list of films to watch. If you're a filmmaker with a movie you want to get more eyes on, hit me up on whatever platform you can find me on at totalcultzone.com. I've actually had a bunch sent to me recently that actually have A-list stars in them. Done something right in the algorithm and been, yeah, weird. I may have a future in this, watching movies and telling people what I think of them business. You can find me at totalcultzone.com. All the links are there. Boo, where can we find you?
You can find me online at BooLamontPW on Instagram or BooLamont Pro Wrestling on Facebook. If you absolutely have to follow me, what you will see is mainly selfies, wrestle pics, and occasional pictures of Cody the Frenchie. What could be better? That was the selling point. That was me selling it to you.
Cool. I'm off to watch Apex.
I'm off to rewatch Fear of a Black Hat.